What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and really appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, studio artists, DJs, and any other creators that are producing music in their home. And they also offer label services as well. They're distributing over a third of the world's digital music at this point. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners 30% off your first year of membership, making their already affordable services even cheaper. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. Click that link and it will give you 30% off your first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and can't thank them enough for their support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Produce Row Cafe here in Portland, Oregon. This has become one of my favorite local hangs because they have free music every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. and Sunday afternoons 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. They are located in inner southeast Portland. And not only do they offer free music on their large patio setup, but they've also got a killer brunch menu from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. The French toast and the breakfast sandwich are lights out. And I can't really do much alcohol personally, but I love their Virgin Bloody Marys. And they've got some other mocktails for folks like me as well. And they're always rotating in new seasonal cocktails. So come through and check out what they've got on deck for fall and winter down there. The patio is now nice, covered, and heated, and will be throughout the fall and winter. So come through, and big thanks to Produce Row for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Friday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so, and that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, which will give it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe, wherever you are listening from. Share it with a friend, tell somebody about it. Any of those things are super helpful, and I've been putting some monthly playlists up on Spotify as well, so those are coming at you every first of the month, so stay tuned for that May one coming at you very soon. And I've also got all of those up on Apple Music as well now, so the links for those things will be in the episode notes. I am chilling on a porch in Oklahoma City right now at my friends Benja and Natasha's house. It's a trip. I met them in Portland, Oregon, maybe like 6 or 7 years ago, and they are being so gracious to let myself and the incredible High Pulp Band, the 9-piece crew, crash with them this evening as High Pulp is playing the Norman Music Festival here in Oklahoma tomorrow. So stoked to be out on the road with the gang. It's been like 5 or 6 days of doing a lot of driving
through Texas, and last night we were in Kansas City, and that was super fun. So stay tuned for some tour diary episodes. I definitely want to expand upon all of my adventures out here, but don't want to spend 30 minutes in the intro of this episode. Episode 306, Abigail LaPelle from Toronto, Canada, is on the show this week, and we're going to get into that conversation momentarily. But yeah, maybe sometime this upcoming week I'll drop one of these tour diaries and kind of talk about my first week out here and some of the adventures going on with the High Pulp crew. But we're coming through the Midwest and all over the East Coast for the next 3-4 weeks, so check out the High Pulp dates. I am stoked to share yet another conversation this week that I recorded out at this year's Tree Fort Music Festival in Boise. Abigail is an incredible singer-songwriter, and I love her vocal delivery and just think she's got this really dynamic approach. And I got to see her play this really intimate solo acoustic set at Tree Fort, in which she had complete commands and the attention of the crowd. Just one of those memorable sets that I saw out there at Tree Fort this year. And I dug talking to her and getting to know where her style derives from and thought process and insight into her tunes. And she was just super kind and fun to hang with. And she's got this brand new record called Stolen Time that just came out last week. So be sure to check that out. Definitely featuring some tunes from that and some others throughout this episode. If you're in the Portland, Oregon area, be sure to check out free music going on at Produce Row Cafe. Every Sunday, DJ spinning vinyl, and Thursday evening, singer-songwriters, jazz trios, and more. And speaking of jazz trios, don't miss former guest of the podcast, Jeff Chilton, and his trio down there at Produce Row Cafe every first Thursday. Big thanks to all the sponsors. All their links will be in the episode notes, along with the links for Abigail LaPelle. And we're going to get into this thing. I hope everyone is doing well out there. And this is episode 306 with Abigail LaPelle, and we are kicking it off with one of my favorite jams from her brand new record, Stolen Time. It's called Ships. Let's do the damn thing.
Just a beautiful dreamer.
Cool.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Stoked to chat with you. I've had the opportunity to get familiar with your tunes over the last couple of weeks when I found out I was going to talk to you here. So it was really nice, I thought, to get to see you play live first and kind of get to see you play solo and kind of, you know, hear the tunes in their maybe their like purest form, rawest form of just you doing the thing is a cool entry point and getting to see you play for sure.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it was very intimate.
Is it just as fun for you to get to play a solo as it is with a band, or is it just a completely different thing for you?
Yeah, it's pretty different. I mean, I think there's pros and cons for both for sure. Like, I sort of enjoy the simplicity. To be honest, as an audience member, as a listener, I really enjoy seeing people do kind of solo acoustic or really strip down, especially, I mean, I guess depending on the musician, but yeah, I find that can be often like really special, especially when you're, you know, inundated with a lot of louder bands and then you kind of stumble upon someone just kind of doing their thing in a more intimate way. So yeah, I think there's nice things about it for sure.
Yeah, I also enjoy that, especially, I mean, the people that are there to see it usually are fans of singer-songwriters, so I think it's cool to get to hear it in that form and just kind of get to know the music that way and then have the different experience with the record too.
Yeah, totally. I guess, to be honest, I've been disappointed in the past when there was someone that I really enjoyed as a singer-songwriter and then saw them with a band, and it was like, oh, it just kind of sounds like any other band as opposed to you kind of... Anyway, so yeah, I miss my band, though. It's been a while since I've been able to play with a full band, and because I haven't been touring or anything for most of the last 2 years, so I'm looking forward to doing some full band shows.
Yeah, I know you were saying that it's kind of been like the first month that you've been out and about in the world, being so locked down in Canada.
Yep, and I also might have mentioned, if I make like a really dumb joke on stage, I like having the drummer there to like punctuate it. So
you got to be your own drummer. You're just doing foot stomps for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, you even you threw it. Threw it back and played, you know, Yellow Rose off of Survivor tonight, which was cool.
Yeah, that was a deep cut. That set was so funny. I probably shouldn't say this, but I burned through my set list. I don't know why. And at one point, I looked at the time, I was almost done my set list, and I looked at my watch, and it had only been like 15 minutes of it. So I was kind of improvising.
Yeah, is it not often that maybe a song that old gets worked into the set?
No, I never played that song. But it was a funny day. But usually it's the opposite. Normally I would run short on time.
Right.
But
you never have too much time.
No, you never have too much time. And just like as a guitar player, it's never too loud. No one ever asked you to turn up. So, man, that was interesting. But yeah, it worked out okay. And then I played that tune, and then I ran out of time for the other song. This is a lot of insider. This conversation will be only interesting to like whomever was at that show just now. But yeah,
is it strange engaging with a song that's old, like that old for you, and just kind of seeing what, like maybe where lyrics connect for you now, or like what you were going through when you were writing a tune 10 years later?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it almost feels like doing a cover song. Like, it's kind of an old tune that I've heard myself play many times. So it feels like there's something nice about that, actually. I like playing old songs. I mean, a lot of songwriters I know are really into doing only their newer things. And I tend to be very conservative in trying out new stuff. So, yeah, the older songs are nice for me to sing. And that's one I don't do ever with a band. So, yeah, so it's kind of cool at a really nice show like that where people are actually listening, and
yeah it was cool to just see people, you know, just take the floor and fill up the floor sitting down. And you know, it was just a cool little quiet intimate space. And
yeah, it's like a dance floor only for sitting and being extremely mellow and sad in a good way, hopefully.
My love is a yellow rose on a thorny vine, it grows, so it comes, so it goes. My love is a yellow rose.
also like appreciate the solo setting for the reason that you can kind of just like call an audible and change it up on the fly. Yep. If you don't really have to like worry about that a band knows this set only kind of thing, and you're locked into that.
Yeah, exactly. And even just like timing wise, or yeah, it's a little more improvisatory, so that can be cool. Or I'll just I feel like my tempo is very it's like speeds up and slows down a little bit, which is nice with the band too. But yeah, there's a little more freedom. I can kind of go off in different little tangents a little more.
Yeah. Well, let's go even further back than Survivor and like talk to me about your entry point into music and growing up in the Toronto area. Is that originally where you're from?
Or, yep.
Okay.
Toronto, Canada, the big smoke. That's what they call it. I am from originally North York, which is a suburb of Toronto. And, at some point, they amalgamated. All the suburbs came together. Anyway, but I lived in Montreal for a lot of years. And so I guess I started playing, yeah, when I moved there. In my 20s, I played in a lot of different bands and did a bunch of stuff. And that was kind of in the 2000s. So there was a lot of attention being paid to Montreal, to the quote-unquote Montreal scene. So yeah, that was a really fertile and interesting time to be there.
Did you go to McGill up there?
No, I went to Concordia.
Okay.
That's the other university.
All right.
But I wasn't a music person. I mean, I didn't study music. Although there's a big music program both at Concordia and McGill. I feel like Concordia was kind of like the weirder kind of people. They have a lot of like electroacoustics, which I'm not even sure what that is, but that's where, and like jazz, which is like anything that's not classical, I guess, falls under that category. So yeah, so I went to Concordia, but I was very casual as a student. I didn't finish high school, so I ended up going to university like in my 20s as a mature student, and I just went like extremely part-time for, I think it took me 8 years to do my undergrad.
But you got to play a lot of music.
Yeah, exactly. I got to play a lot of music and toured around, and yeah.
Were you did you pick up an instrument from as a kid then?
Yeah, I taught myself to play a guitar. I found a guitar in my house that I don't know where even it came from. It was pretty beat up. It was kind of like held together with duct tape. And I named it Dylan after my hero, Bob Dylan. And then I kind of taught myself to play, but like I didn't even have, I think eventually I got a book of chords, you know, like chord charts. But I didn't even have that originally. I would just kind of like literally just hit the strings until it sounded like something. And there was no YouTube at that time, so I was on my own. But, but I mean, don't get me wrong. Since then, I've hit up some YouTube videos. But yeah, I never really studied music. I always loved music, though. I always loved singing and writing songs. And I started playing guitar probably when I was like 12, 13, pretty early. I did a little bit of piano lessons. I did sing in choirs too for a few years, which I really liked.
Did you have like other friends that played music, or was there like any sort of like, what was the guitar doing in the house, Abigail?
Yeah,
was there like family that played tunes at all?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think probably I was the youngest of four, and so my older siblings would, I don't know, like I think the guitar was probably my brother's. He probably found it in the trash or like at a yard sale or something like that. My mother played piano, and we had a grand piano in our house, which took up like half the house. But so that was cool. But she was actually, it was very cool of her because she had taught piano a little bit, and she was really opposed to like forcing us to learn an instrument if we didn't want to, because I think she'd had so many bad experiences with students who didn't want to be doing it, and with her own piano teachers where, you know, like old school, they would like slap your hand with a ruler if you made a mistake. So she was very not kind of overbearing about it and didn't really force it. So yeah, I didn't take piano very long, but it's nice as a foundation to just kind of get a little bit of music literacy and yeah. But yeah, so many of my friends are major music nerds, and I'm very slowly kind of getting more interested now in learning a bit more theory and sort of practicing a bit more deliberately.
Yeah. Do you also find that having that foundation on the keys is super helpful in informing your vocals and learning to sing even?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's, yeah, for sure. Because it's such a, it's so intuitive as a visual, like a keyboard is laid out in front of you in a way that makes a lot more sense compared to a guitar. I still don't quite understand the physics of it. And now I play a little bit of accordion on the new record. And so, yeah, I think it is really good. And singing in choir, for sure. Like, that's some good ear training. But I've gotten more interested the last couple of years in doing a bit more sort of learning vocal technique or doing more warm-ups and things to make it more sustainable, because it's so easy to ruin your voice when you're performing every night. And
the lyrics, were you always writing in some form as a kid? Did that come pretty early on too?
Yeah, I always was writing songs. Always. Although I never really wrote them down. I still don't. I'm trying to work at it more, but I usually just sing and don't physically write it down. Yeah, as long as I can remember, I always wrote songs. I don't really understand. It's hard for me to imagine that people don't write songs.
I feel that.
Yeah. Do you make up songs?
Yeah, I make up songs.
Sure, there
I
you go.
I make up songs. It's hard for me. Like, you know, I don't really like actively play music much anymore. I'll play at home and write some tunes still, but it's hard for me to not be kind of like walking around in the day to day and not just grab my phone and write down a line of lyrics or
exactly.
something. You know, even if
yeah.
I'm never going to look at it again.
Yep.
Or piece it somewhere, that is still like a constant thing that I can't seem to shake.
Right. With or without a melody?
Maybe both.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes mm-hmm. with, sometimes without.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely sing to myself whilst walking down the street, trying not to make eye contact with anyone. Because, yeah, that's some of the best writing time, just walking. That rhythm is very conducive, I think.
So it's like totally a thing, though, where you're just like, as you're writing and creating a new song, you're just kind of storing these things mentally as far as the lyrics and not getting to a point where you need to really write them down and just referencing voice memos and whatnot
yeah,
for
exactly.
those demo versions.
Yep. It really haunts me, too, because I can't even think about the thousands of hours of work. I'm never going to go through them all. But I'm trying to get better. I'm just trying to be more systematic in life in general. Like I've started writing lyrics more now. I don't really like in some ways writing lyrics, because I would rather sing and just kind of syllables and sounds, and then I feel like something is sometimes lost in translation when I have to nail down like words, and then it gives it a specific meaning as opposed to like just the free form sort of yeah gibberish singing, I guess.
I appreciate your lyrics quite a bit, going through all of the records and just, but also I think the way you use your voice and the space it holds, like often feels like it is not just, you know, a vehicle for the lyrics, but it's also very much an instrument. And I don't know, I think like when I listen to your music, I immediately thought of Beth Orton.
I don't know
if that's like registers for you at all, but like that's one of my favorite singers, and you evoke like a very similar emotion to me of like what she is able to do with her voice and the dynamics of it. And it feels like, I don't know, a lot of your songs kind of showcase your voice very differently as well.
Oh, that's cool. I'll take it. I don't know Beth Orton's music very much, but I've heard that comparison before, and it's extremely Lovely.
Sugaring Season. You got to check out Sugaring Season.
Okay, I'm writing
it's a,
this
It's a great record.
I definitely have heard, like, the hits. Is she still... I feel like I haven't heard...
I don't think she's put out anything out in the last, like, few years. But, yeah, she's got some really killer records.
Yeah. And it just, like, such an interesting voice.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
interesting in a good way, by the way.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yeah, was there also just, like, an appeal to you to do something a little bit left of center with the tunes? Because... I don't know. It just feels like there's a lot of unique choices in the delivery of things, or even the instrumentation at times. Like thinking about "Runaway."
Oh, interesting. You know?
Just like I don't know. You like on that one that seems to be like a really clear representation to me at least, like of how you use the vocal as an instrument.
Oh, cool. Well, that song. I guess I bought this accordion at. a junk sale or whatever, and it's such a cool sounding accordion, but it kind of sounds like my voice. Like I feel like there's this reedy quality, and it almost sounds like it's two of me like doubled. And then that song also has like a whole chorus of my voice. It was like a choir of me. But yeah, that's so funny, because I don't even think I was gonna record it, and I sent the producer that I worked with on that last record, Chris Stringer, I sent him a bunch of stuff, like just demos that I'd made. And that was one of them. It was just like this weird ass song that like has this weird kind of pickup part and then it goes into like several different time signatures. Anyway, and of all the songs, he was like, you got to do, he really liked that one, which I was surprised. And yeah. So we kind of recreated, that's how a lot of my demos are that I make. There's like a ton of my vocals and then just whatever weird instruments are at my house. So that's how that came about. But I think that's the first song I ever wrote on the accordion. Like, I don't know how to really play. I've been learning since then, but I feel really proud of that song actually. Cause it's kind of weird. But at the same time, it's sort of like it's almost like a standard issue. Like, I don't know. It's like a very simple kind of pop song in terms of like the sentiment of it and like the melody. So,
but it's just like filtered through this accordion, so it makes it feel like so different. And I was very curious if you had actually written that initial idea on the accordion, or if
yeah,
that was
100%.
Have you always kind of like gravitated to things that were weirder, like kind of like left of center, unconventional when it comes to music?
I feel like that's true. I feel like I'm drawn to what is weird or interesting, like especially being a self-taught musician. I would often make like a weird mistake and then be like, oh, that sounds dope. And now that I'm, not that I'm like a super hotshot guitar player, but now it's so much more familiar, that doesn't happen as much. And you fall into these well-worn patterns. So therefore, it's kind of fun to be like, no, I'm going to play the piano and make a weird, cool mistake, or just not know what to expect necessarily. But I really want my songs to be a little bit weird. I don't know if I've thought about that before. It's an interesting question. I think just because that's what is interesting to me. Because I write a lot of songs that never would see the light of day because I find them a little bit boring.
Just like a little too on the nose.
Or,
yeah, I don't know. It's because to me, like listening to the music, you know, like whether it's the previous records or the new one, it's not like it feels necessarily like experimental. It just feels like, you know, unique choices are being made to make it feel, you know, not so repetitive, or, you know, there's just these little things happening sometimes in the production that gives it something extra, or even just watching you play that solo set. Yeah, I just thought you were like killing on the guitar as well. Oh. And just like your style of playing like felt different to me as well. Like, and yeah, I don't know. It just seems
neat. Yeah, again, I think it's also from not knowing what what I'm doing. That's probably been helpful in some ways. But I think of like there's certain, this is going to sound so dumb, like there's certain kinds of chords, because I don't really have like a lot of musical training, but like there's certain chords or changes or little things that I think of as being like special. It sounds so silly. It's almost like a special effect, like going to, you know, something unexpected, or not even necessarily unexpected. I don't even know. I have to think about this more and be more articulate. But yeah, I guess maybe that's what I respond to as a listener. Just something that's like, my partner has this theory about music that good music is like I don't remember the exact ratio, but it's like 90% familiar and 10% like weird, basically something like that. So it's like enough that you're comfortable, but then you're just like a little bit uncomfortable, yeah, but just kind of in the right balance. And so I think there's something to that.
Yeah. Do you also think that you gravitate towards new instruments to bring that out of yourself as far as that songwriting? Because you are self-taught at a lot of things, and you're just like stuck with like whatever rudimentary thing mm-hmm. you understand and have to build on that, and you can't be like so overly technical or like overthink it so much.
Yeah, totally. And it's at the same time now, sometimes I feel like at one point I went pretty nuts where I would have like, I would do a show where I would have bass pedals. I would have this kind of one man band thing set up where I would have bass pedals. I would put like a metronome and then sample it and then have like weird effects that I would put on it in real time and then kind of be looping things. Like I was doing all this jazz, and then it was like such a pain in the ass, and it often didn't work well. Like it would cause a lot of feedback and problems during my set, and I would be like lugging all this gear around. And so I definitely had a moment at some point where I was like, I gotta get back to basics, and maybe my energy like would be better spent learning my instrument better rather than bringing in all this like technology. So, and again, I mean, I think it's a balance. It all depends. But so then I kind of went way in the opposite way and started playing just like completely stripped down.
So when you were amidst the college years, were you playing a lot in other people's groups, filling in on different instruments, or was it more focused on your solo music?
Yeah, probably both. I did a lot of singing with other people, which I really, which I still do, but not as much, especially because I've been, before COVID, I was on tour a lot, but I really love singing with people, and I would play, yeah, like I feel like we all had so many bands back in the day, and I had some kind of stuff that was my solo project. I played in a band, I played in like a post no wave girl band that was really loud and annoying. They were really good. But my whole job in that band, all I did was play bass parts on a synth. So I would like literally go like brah, 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 brah. And man, that was such a loud band.
A little bit different than what I saw today.
Yeah, a little bit different.
Do you find that you like learn things about your voice or like what you're able to do vocally when you're kind of removed from the songwriting and you're kind of just there as a backup vocalist or offering your, you know, instrumentation in those kinds of situations?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's especially as a singer, it's so fun to just show up and not have to like carry, especially compared to like a drummer. I love singing with other people. It's so much fun being a side man, side person. And I love even just kind of, you know, singing covers. And there's just a lot less ego, I guess. When it's my own songs, I'm extremely self-conscious. I feel like on the last record, I had a technique that I would pretend that I was singing a backup vocal when I was doing my lead vocal because I get so self-conscious. But if I could just tell myself, or I try to be fancy. Like I think as a singer, it's easy to be like vain and be thinking about like how it sounds. And then that is a bad like feedback loop to get into. So I had this technique where I was like, I'm going to just pretend then I'm singing a backup vocal and just like hit it really straight on and don't try to do any like fancy flourishes or or whatever. And then those takes ended up being so much better. So yeah, it's a little tip for all you divas out there.
Is it also nice to kind of like not have the pressure to always be like playing your own music if you need that outlet in some ways?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's funny too, especially being a sort of in this role of a singer-songwriter where I'm like the band leader. So it's, I mean, I have wonderful collaborators, and it's often kind of the same cast of characters, but it's a bit of a revolving door where it's like, it can be, yeah, it's just different than being like in a full-on band where you're like a unit and you, it's always kind of, I'm like the boss in that way. And that's such a weird thing be challenging.
I was just watching, I've watched it a couple times now since it came out, that Alanis Morissette documentary that came out recently.
Oh, I haven't seen it
yet. It's so good, but it's all, you know, based around Jagged Little Pill coming out and that blowing up, and just at her at like 20 years old, and her manager is just like, hey, just to let you know, you need to be the manager of your band now. Like, right. As this young person in the world, like experiencing all of this, you know, huge success and records blowing up, and you also need to make sure that you you're running this shit, and yeah. They know that.
Oh man, she's from Ontario, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Represent,
another Canadian gem.
Yeah, yeah. Ottawa. Shout out to all my Ottawa friends.
So there is like a lot of collaboration still in what you're doing, even as a solo artist. You have like a committee of people that you like to bounce ideas off of as far as your songs that you're working on and whatnot.
Yeah, totally. And it's a nice, I guess I kind of like to have it both ways because I'm such a loner. I think that's why I've been sort of drawn to songwriting all my life, is it's a way to be very solitary. And then at the same time, it's really nice, especially with the band, to work out arrangements. And I've never really wanted to show up in the studio with a studio band. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I feel like I'd rather, like the new album is, we recorded, you know, live off the floor. And even if the players are amazing, I feel like I won't be comfortable unless we've already, you know, run through stuff and rehearsed it and come up with ideas. I know you can do that stuff just in the studio. I think of it as like a singer-songwriter within the band is like superimposed on top of it.
Yeah.
Whereas I would rather, even as a solo artist, I like that idea of working stuff out not in the studio. And then you end up tweaking it, and you sort of, again, it's like kind of the best of both, I guess.
Yeah, and you also just like kind of have a desire to have a connection to the people in the room that are playing with you, instead of, like you're saying, just kind of having studio musicians maybe that just show up for the day to do the thing and you don't really know them that well.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yep.
Sparrow for My Heart is off the Getaway record. It is one of my favorites of yours. And I was curious if, are you typically writing lyrics from like your own point of view, or is it a character's point of view at times, or just references to stories that you've heard?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know if I know the answer to that. Like that song, I wrote that so long ago, but I just had the little riff and I didn't have lyrics for it. That's a good example of like, I didn't really want to write lyrics because I just had that. It was just about the way that kind of melody falls. And so I feel like I came up with lyrics for that. It's sort of like after the fact I can say what it's about. You know what I mean? Like I can sort of like, I can impose some kind of meaning on it.
Yeah.
But it's not, I didn't sit down to be like, let's write a song about this. But I mean, that tune is kind of about, it's kind of about running away, I guess. That there was, the inspiration of that actually is that my father had a heart condition and he once made a comment. It was like a happy moment. Like we were having like a family dinner and it was like very nice and it was cheesy. And he was like, oh, he said something about this makes my heart sore. And we all were like, oh, that's nice. And then I was like, wait a minute, sore can mean, that can mean like flying or it can mean pain. And so, yeah, that's a little bit about where the lyrics of that song came from.
Be still, my heart. Don't start. Don't start bleeding too. Run, 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 run.
Hey everybody, just wanted to take a quick minute to let you know that this episode of the podcast is sponsored by North 45 Pub, located in the Alphabet District of Northwest Portland. They've got a killer selection of Belgian beers and an extensive liquor wall with over 200 bottles. Mussels and Fritz are on the menu, their cheeseburger is lights out, and they've always got some killer weekly specials as well. Aside from the menu items and beverages, they've got this awesome covered patio that is heated throughout the fall and winter with a bunch of big screens to watch all your favorite sports. And the best part is they have DJs playing tunes there every Tuesday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. and Sundays 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. So come through North 45 Pub for some tunes and some food. Let's get back to the episode.
Like, do you find yourself like writing more often from like your point of view and your experiences in the world, or is it like, do you like to write when you hear someone else's story? Like,
I
felt like UFO is maybe a good example of this. You mm-hmm. talked a little bit about that today, about how this is like just some drunken story you heard, or
yeah,
you know, is it often like something like that where you do just hear this random story somewhere that leads to you maybe writing a tune, or just hearing like something in passing in a conversation, just one line that maybe inspires something?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like, I think it's definitely a combination, but it's still always me. Like, even that thing about the UFO, then I like turn it into my story in a way. I mean, it's written in the first person. I guess that doesn't mean it's autobiographical, but it's that thing where I'm like, for example, with that tune, I was like, well, it's interesting to me that even as a person who has not ever seen a UFO and therefore doesn't quote unquote believe in them, but I still spend a lot of time staring up at the sky and sort of thinking about the cosmos. Yeah. And there's just such a kind of universal thing for a human. So yeah, I feel like it's me like metabolizing all these different stories and ideas and then just puking it out in song form. Oh, that sounds really gross.
It sounds much nicer.
Okay,
when it's happening, it doesn't yeah. sound gross.
Okay, good.
It's very beautiful, actually. Like, your voice is incredible. It's so killer. It was so rad to see
cool.
the set today. Yeah, I was just like very blown away. So it was,
thanks. Yeah. I love to sing. I'm definitely, now I'm like losing my voice after a week of South By and now being here, but.
And have you always like felt pretty comfortable in the space, like in the live setting and sharing your tunes and being revealing of yourself in some way and developing the stage banter and whatnot?
I mean, it's funny that it comes across as me being comfortable.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm so awkward. I feel completely like overcome by anxiety at all times performing. But I mean, I guess on some level there's kind of a tension there, I guess, because I mean obviously, well, like I said before, I'm such a loner and yet like I'm very introverted, and yet I do a thing where I go and in front of people and sing my song, so there must be some kind of a contradiction there, or like a tension between those two impulses, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think it's also maybe that awkwardness can come across as charming or authentic. It's not
right.
like, it doesn't feel like you're trying to do weird shit to do weird shit, you know? It just feels like you're just up there doing the thing, but also you do look incredibly like comfortable in what you're doing when you're playing the tunes, and you know, it doesn't feel like the person on stage is out of control or like has lost the audience in some way because it doesn't look like they, you know, handle themselves, I guess.
Yeah.
Like you had that, like that was not a quiet room by any means. Like,
but I meant, I silenced them.
Eventually. Like, it was, I don't know. That was cool to see that everybody paid attention and everybody did quiet down once you got going. And like, you didn't have to ask them to do that. Like, it was just the command of the room in, of some way.
No. Yeah. I don't think you can ask for that.
Yeah.
I feel like it has to happen. Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I feel so awkward, but I have worked really hard to not be self-deprecating, especially on stage or just that thing of like, if someone like says something nice after the show and like, I don't know, I feel like when I was younger, lots of people, it's hard to just take a compliment or right. It's hard not to be like, oh, I just try not to say anything negative because I feel like it's like, well, it sounds so corny, but it's like people have come, it's like a respect for the audience thing in a way. But, and again, not that everyone is different, but I think it's also like, I feel like it harms my performance if I'm gonna say something bad about my performance. Yeah. So therefore, yeah. But it's my impulse is always to like be super self-deprecating. So it's a work in progress for sure.
Does it feel different to you up there when it does feel like you have that quiet of a room opposed to, I mean, you've been playing slow folky music for a long time. I would imagine you've been in quite a few situations where it hasn't been so quiet when you're playing.
Yeah, I sort of enjoy, I guess it's a masochistic thing, but I kind of enjoy the challenge. Especially because I didn't really grow up doing a lot of folky. I wasn't really connected with like a folk music scene. So I would play at like, I don't know, like indie rock venues and things. And it was often like a real challenge, but there would most often come that moment where people would a hush would fall over the crowd. And that's like so satisfying. And I actually find it really hard to play in a quiet room. And I've been so lucky, especially the last few years, to play like a lot nicer like listening rooms and kind of, you know, like soft theater, like kind of nice places where people are quiet. And I find it so hard. It's so much easier when no one's listening in a way because there's like no pressure. And then I'm not thinking about it. And then again, it's that sort of feedback loop of like, if you're thinking about it, you're not in the moment. And anyways, you get the picture. Yeah. So, but anyway, it's a good problem to have. For sure. Playing nicer shows where people are listening.
Going through all of your records, it feels like each of them, you know, have their own vibe to them. And there's these shifts that happen. And I was curious if that was like a conscious decision on your part to just kind of always want to have something that feels fresh, or do you feel like that just kind of happens naturally as, you know, your own style evolves, or like as you're listening to new music, and if that like really infects what you're writing at that moment?
Yeah, I don't know how deliberate it is, but I do feel like the new album Stolen Time, I really wanted to try something a little bit different as far as, you know, like I said, it was recorded live off the floor. We didn't have any click tracks. It was a lot more of a loose process. And I feel like I can kind of hear that in the songs. Like even just the fact that I was doing all my vocals like live while playing, which is obviously a lot more natural. So yeah, I'm happy with how it turned out. I don't feel like the album has a super cohesive sound, which almost is by design, because again, I really like having like some of the songs are more fully instrumented with the band and some of them are more stripped down. Yeah. And kind of things in between those two. So I almost wanted it to be like a mixtape, like it would sound like each song could be almost from a different album in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, it does feel like each song is maybe different from each other, but it all feels like it belongs together still. And maybe it's just like the way it was recorded. Cause I think that was my big takeaway from listening to this new record, and just kind of, it feels like you're in the room just listening to it. You know,
that's cool.
If that makes sense, like it just like, I think that, yeah, I guess that's just capturing it the way that you did. Cause I don't know. It just, it doesn't feel like there's any studio magic going on. You know, it just feels
like a band.
This is the raw thing that was happening there. And like, it still sounds like big to me, and it still sounds like very polished at times too, but it just doesn't feel like too much magic happened to like make these songs.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's neat. But yeah, I guess they all have the same kind of physics of being in that room. And it was a really fun studio to record at too. We went to Montreal last spring and just kind of hunkered down. And
yeah. Talk to me about recording and working with Howard Billerman on the record and what he brought to Stolen Time, and maybe how he changed your approaches to things, if at all.
Yeah, working with Howard was really cool. I've known him for a lot of years because I used to live in Montreal, and I knew him a little bit. We like were neighbors in Mile End at one point. And I recorded at his old studio once. I just did some demos there, but we haven't really had a chance to work together before. So yeah, I was really glad it worked out. I mean, Howard's just pretty, he's just very, he's made so many great records, and I feel like, it was a really good experience as far as, I guess kind of what I was saying, like that it was just a very open, you know, we kind of had a lot of latitude to do our thing, but at the same time he was like very gently kind of guiding and giving input, and he had a lot of cool suggestions for musicians. But I don't know, he's like a very easygoing person. He's not super set, like, you know, like we didn't, like I was saying, we didn't use a click track, and it was kind of often I feel like he's someone that really values that pretty raw, I mean, I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth, but just music that sounds like music, that sounds like people in a room, and that sounds like a version of the song. So yeah, I feel like he subtly shaped a lot of the sound of the record in a really nice way.
Yeah, is there moments amidst that where maybe a producer like Howard kind of offers you some insight into one of your songs that you didn't really like see before, or like helps you more clearly understand how to bridge certain gaps or get places?
Yeah, totally. And like, I don't want to use the word competent because it sounds like you're damning with faint praise, but I just feel like he's someone that is obviously like some of it would be very technical things, like, well, not very tech, but like performance things, like, oh, you should double your guitar in this chorus because it'll just kind of beef it up, like stuff like that, like pretty straight ahead stuff. But then in other moments there were like, for example, that song Land of Plenty, I just played the song and we recorded it. It was very simple, like electric guitar and vocals. And then there was a lot of discussion about what were we going to do? Should I put some, like, we had this great pedal steel player in mind to maybe do some overdubs, and maybe, I don't know, maybe as far, like, just as far as the arrangement of it, we were like chatting about it. And then I think it was a mutual thing, but in the end, we kept it like very simple and didn't add all this like kind of fancy flourishes. I feel like that's the second time I've said the phrase fancy flourishes. This is my lack of musical vocabulary coming through.
If you're playing the Abigail LaPel drinking game for this episode of the podcast,
take a shot.
Take a shot.
Oh my goodness.
Fell in love with a sailor's daughter. Only the sailor's daughter.
I guess it was just a nice, like, I don't know what the word is, like just allowing the music to be in a certain way. And I feel like that's super valuable as a collaborator, And so I guess my point with that song is, we opted to keep it really stripped down. And again, if I'd wanted to beef it up with more fancy flourishes, that would have been fine. I always felt like, I guess that's the cool thing, is that I didn't feel like I had to like fight for my choices or whatever, but it just felt like a nice collaboration as far as what would serve the song well. And a song like that, you could take it in so many ways, because it could just be like a very Nashville sounding kind of folky song, but I think in the end it was more special the way it ended up.
Yeah. And is it easy for you to detach from like maybe your initial ideas when you're kind of in that situation, and maybe let go of like what you thought your vision was when you maybe hear a better idea?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, because I'm pretty open. Like, I think, again, on this album, it felt like it didn't feel challenging in that way at all, because there were some things where I knew what I wanted, and it was almost kind of, you know, to the letter, like I would have a specific part for the strings or something like that. And then at other points, I was kind of more open, and there were some nice surprises too, where I think it was, for example, the Icy Music song, which is a piano tune, and I wanted strings on it. I wanted this kind of almost cheesy, like orchestral kind of a sound. And then Howard's idea was to put horns in it. And I think that might have been one where at first I was like, I had a specific idea in mind, but it was, I feel like it was the right choice, like 100%. And again, if I'd really felt strongly about it, it wouldn't have been a question. But yeah, I think I'm pretty, man, I feel like I'm pretty easygoing. And then if I do know what I want, then I'm able to advocate for it.
The piano playing on Pines is one of my favorite things on the record.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that one just kills for nice. Sure.
It's just nice too, because in the past I've done, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but I've more, especially with piano, I've done vocals separately because it's so hard to get any separation. You know, you're like playing this loud instrument, and so there's so much piano in the vocal mic and vice versa. And but this one, yeah, we just recorded it live with, that's what I mean as far as working with Howard, is like he does not care about stuff like that. Like if I wanted to do it separately, I guess I could have, but I feel like he'll say things like, well, how do you play the song live? Like, as you know, I only make a record not that often, but I go and play shows like all the time, so that's definitely more my comfort zone. And I think it's nice that was able to come through on the record.
Yeah, and represent some of that spirit that is in the live show, even totally. When there isn't a full band accompanying you or anything like that.
Yep. Also, I've been trying to teach myself piano during the pandemic. I got some piano books from the library, and I was learning some scales and stuff like that. So, you know, hopefully. The discerning listener can hear some of that in the in the takes.
Snow in the valley and flashes a feathered light. Cold stars shine.
Who's somebody that you feel like has had just like a really big impact on how you operate as a musician or just like a creative in some form?
Oh, that's a great question. Like as far as another musician?
Yeah, either music or just like, I don't know, it can be anybody that maybe has just made you think about the way you approach life. I mean, this is your life, right? This is your journey. Your path is
indeed
traveling around, playing music, hopefully, when there's not pandemics going on and things like that.
Truly. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I guess my partner is an audio engineer, and we talk about music, not surprisingly, a lot, but he mostly listens to like experimental improv jazz music, which is not necessarily my cup of tea, but I feel like I've learned a lot from from him, like, especially in terms of what I'm talking about, like, man, he doesn't believe in like any kind of synthetic rhythm, or I just think it's, yeah, the idea that like all music is improvised basically. And so I guess that was a big influence on this album in particular, because I wanted to try a little bit more of an organic approach. And I mean, I could think of a lot of artists, but like, I feel like it's that thing where it's like none of those, if you name any like great record from history, like none of them had a click track. And again, no, I mean, there are tools, like there's a time and a place for it. I'm not like against a click track for all time, but yeah, that's the kind of stuff I've been thinking about a lot.
Yeah. And because you're self-taught at a lot of things, do you feel like you're often just the sponge in the room when you're around other people that are like very technically sound at things, or like people that you admire their instrumentation? You're just trying to like learn from them and figure out how you can pick up on what they're doing.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, it can be intimidating. So I guess I get imposter syndrome not so much as a songwriter, just because like I said, writing songs is like breathing to me. I don't know how to not write a song. But as far as, even when you ask me about who influenced, I kind of get like anxious, like, oh, am I going to say it? It's like, I'm going to like fail the test of like thinking of someone. So, and because so many of my friends are so knowledgeable about different genres and eras and geographies of music. And I feel like, I don't know, I kind of like what I like. And so many of the bands that have meant the most to me are like just kind of random, like friends bands over the years, where it's not necessarily any one album or genre or something that is,
Well, I appreciate your tunes quite a bit and your approach to storytelling. I think this Stolen Time record is probably my favorite out of the records put out. And, but yeah, like I said, I think they all kind of offer a different experience within them. So it's nice to, it's nice when I get to talk to somebody like you that I like, not super familiar with your music until 2 weeks ago, but I have like these few records to go through mm-hmm. and kind of like see the progressions and the growth and the changes and stuff. And then to get to see you play earlier before we talked is always helpful as well, just to kind of see like what kind of spirit you bring to that. And yeah, it's been great. I love the tunes, and I would encourage people to, you know, pick up one of these vinyl copies with Stolen Time, or all like any of the other records. You've got a couple other ones that are available on the Real Wax as well. I don't have to just stream this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'll make sure to put the links in the episode notes so people can keep up with what you're doing. I want to play the episode out with the title track, which is Stolen Time.
Awesome.
Do you remember anything about writing and recording this one that sticks out to you?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of nice as far as like, I feel that it sounds like kind of like a live take. And I was really, Christine Bougie plays lap steel, and she's like a really great player from Toronto, and Dan Fortin played bass, and Danny Nash played drums and sang. Oh, and oh my goodness, Katie Moore from Montreal sang on this one too. So that was kind of a fun, like, I feel like it just has a nice build to it. Like, it starts off kind of soft, and then at the end, this is the most like belting of the album. So yeah, that's all I'll say.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to play it out with Stolen Time off the Stolen Time record. And we end every episode of the podcast, Abigail, with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which is, it's a program. So if we could get the Abigail LaBelle, it's a program, we can properly sail this thing out.
It's a program.
She nailed it, everybody. That's Abigail. I'll put all the links in the episode notes so you can keep up with her. And that's the Jelly Jams. And we will catch you on the flip side. Treefort, Boise, Portland, Toronto, Canada, wherever you are listening from.
Waterfall. Can you hear my voice at all? Answer.
just want to give a big shout out to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Can't say thank you enough to DistroKid for their support of this thing. And make sure you go into the episode notes and find that DistroKid link to receive 30% off your first year of membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. So make sure you take advantage of that. And the link is also in the link in my Instagram bio on the link tree. So you can find it there as well. Big thanks to DistroKid. Stay up, stay tuned.